This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 18, Faster and Slower Balls. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the difference between the attitude of getting on with it and when you feel you're in a complete lost situation, how you deal with that. We also talk about how to bowl a bit faster by using something called the stretch reflex, and what to do when it comes to slower balls, how you can use them to take more wickets. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to better cricket. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, and it's half an hour of good old-fashioned cricket chat and a little bit of banter along the way as well. It's already started before we started recording. That's how it goes around here. And who's been the subject of that banter? Well, of course, it's the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras. Under the pump already?
Yeah, the victim is always, mate, me. I'm always, always the victim. You bullies.
All in the finest spirit, of course. And the bully in question is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. How do you respond to the bullying accusations?
Yeah, accept it with pleasure.
Fantastic. Well, you know, that's how it is here. All in very good spirits, of course. I wanted to talk a little bit this week, get into our topic straight away, and talk about a subject which is quite hard to wrap your head around, I suppose. It's not like playing a cover drive or bowling an off break or something like that. It's more to do with attitude and approach to the game. And I know, Gareth, one of your mantras is get on with it. I had this sort of some interesting experiences over the weekend different kinds of approach to that, if you like. And it was to do with how you play under lost situations, if you like. So, for example, if you know, when you feel like you've been hard done by in selection, and you feel like no matter what you do as a player, that you're going to be sort of cheated out of your rightful position. You see that happen quite a lot as well. I've certainly seen on Twitter recently, when I was talking about selection with players, someone saying, "Oh, I can't get selected for the team I want to be selected in because someone is mates with the captain, and even though he's clearly a worse player, there's nothing I can do to get into the side." And that's a frustration. How do you manage players' frustrations when they feel they're hard done by in selection?
I'd like to think that it's not an issue that's as kind of politically corrupt almost as someone's getting in because they're someone's friend. I'd like to think that the selection process that we'll have, it is something that we can talk openly about, and is something that people will trust in. And even if people are querying it, given a little bit of a conversation and a bit of discussion about the reasons for and against them playing, they should see why they're in the situation they are in. So in my experience, that should kind of be fairly self-explanatory for them. However, there will be instances, undoubtedly, where people are selected or not selected for the wrong reasons. And if that does happen, then there's a whole different kettle of fish for the coach to manage with, or the captain, or whoever's involved in selection. So something that I've not experienced a lot of in the past, but something that I would imagine we have to be managed extremely sensitively by the people who are in those decision-making roles.
Yeah, it's another one of those where communication is all important, isn't it? Because often, if the communication isn't there, then, and it doesn't matter whether it's on the field or off the field, you know, if the communication isn't there, then it's easy for someone to get the wrong end of the stick and assume one thing is happening when the truth is something else. So that's why it's important to always be talking to each other. Even if you disagree with an approach, at least you know what's happening and why it's happening. And that can make all the difference to a player, can't it?
Completely right, mate. And some, you know, you don't really want the player to completely agree with you, do you? Let's be honest. You know, if you get to a situation where he rolls over and lets you tickle his belly, then you probably haven't got somebody who's willing to fight back that to get that spot, isn't it? And communication is crucial. I think you should try and do it as best you can. It's not always possible, but face to face is the best way of doing it. Skype is the second best way of doing it. Phone call is the next best way of doing it. The dreaded email was something I'd simply avoid. And you still hear examples of where people haven't been communicated with at all, which is just absolutely bizarre and terrible in this day and age. But the more you can do stuff face-to-face, the better. It puts a personal sort of care approach to it when you're given that message, when you're standing in front of somebody. And, it, you know, even with 14-year-olds, every time a decision is made, the first people that I speak to are the ones that it's going to negatively affect first before I speak to anybody that it's going to positively affect. And often the approach really is to get them to talk rather than you just telling them exactly why they've been dropped. And often if you ask your questions correctly and openly enough, they will give you the reasons why we're having this conversation in the first place. If they're not going to accept it at all, then just keep it the fact. You know, just talk about statistics, talk about what the balance of a team is, talk about things that you are irrefutable as much as possible. Because as soon as you start talking about things like feelings and I think that this may happen, then it's just such a grey area and you get yourselves into an absolute pickle. So you know, face to face, keep it factual, let the individual talk, which often gives the insight into the reason why you're having that conversation about selection, and then and give them the opportunity to come back. If you go down to a second team and you do this, you're very welcome to keep practicing with us to show us what you've got. All of those things, you've got to give people hope and opportunity, and if you do that, then you'll find that you'll have a competitive member of a squad as opposed to somebody who just goes off and takes his bag to another club or another team.
And how, obviously that's off field communication, and how much of that can be done on the field? I mean, you know, you don't want to be standing around having a long chat in the middle of a match, but how much is it, you know, if the captain is saying to a bowler, I need you to look, I know this is a difficult end for you, but I need you to bowl from it. Can you commit to it for me? How quickly can you get that message across to a player, especially if he's not keen to accept that as the answer?
I think the way you go about it is about motivation, isn't it? I mean, there must be a reason why you as captain have decided that guy is the best option. You know, unless you've come to the fact that there isn't any bowlers left that have got any overs under their belt, there's obviously a reason why.
There's a reason why
that you're going to this guy. And, you know, motivationally, you can give it your best shot and say, well, the reason why I'm bowling you to that short boundary is you're my best exponent of this or that or the other, or you've proven down the years that you have been successful in these situations. You're my best death bowler, and that's the way to go about that. But you know, if it is that you've got no bowlers left, you're my only hope. You know, it worked for Luke Skywalker, so it might work for you as well.
And you will always get those times where you do disagree with each other. It's about being able to manage that and know exactly when and how to deal with that is so important, isn't it? Because you could just end up having an argument and that's not going to help anyone. Again, on or off the field, you know, if you're at loggerheads, no one's going to make any progress.
No, that's true, and especially on the field. I mean, you know, one of the things that I always try to get my players to do, if you do get to that situation where it's just going belly up and people are just arguing, is getting somebody to be the adult on the pitch, you know, and just go, hang on a minute, look, this isn't helping. Let's press the pause button on this now. Let's come back to this at another date. We've got training on Tuesday or whatever. Okay, let's draw a line under that now and let's revisit it at a more appropriate time. And to me, timing is absolutely everything. And often when you're in the heat of a moment is Straussi always talks about it. You want to try and take the emotion out of that and try and be that assassin, that clinical person under that immense pressure, or whilst you're making errors out there, try and take the emotion away, and then you can revisit that emotion at an appropriate time off the field. Often what you tend to find is that emotion dies down and people start to think more logically anyway when they're off the field. But if you can do it on the field, that is the crucial thing. But it needs somebody to be the adult in the room or on the field to get you into that space in the first place.
Right, let's finish this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question. Action requires reflection.
Yes.
No.
Second question. Appreciation breeds confidence.
Yes.
No.
Third question. Instant actionable feedback accelerates learning.
Yes.
Yes.
It's time now for the questions section on the show. Here we dip into the mailbag, or the virtual mailbag, to get questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show or readers to the Pitch Vision website. And we do our best to answer those questions. And then we choose a winner of a prize for the best question of the week, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Sandeep has sent in the first question this week. Sandeep says, I know the drill to create the feeling of stretch with help of a partner, but it doesn't do the job. Delaying the bowling arm is quite tricky to do. Can you tell me a way to delay the bowling arm and explain it a bit more clearly? So I guess we're talking about that, you know, that hip and shoulder separation, that ability to drive the hip forward and hold the upper body back a little bit in order to create that snap through of the action, which all fast bowlers are looking for. But Sandeep's struggling with it. So what do we think?
Yeah, well, the hip and shoulder separation drill is a way of doing that. But I think, you know, rather than let's go to drills, let's go to the start of a technique, I suppose. And if you think about, you know, if you put it into Ian Pont speak and Stephen Jones speak, then you think about tent peg one. If you actually watch a bowler bowl or video a bowler bowl and get them into the position where they're at back foot contact, regularly you'll see that their arms are already quite significantly split away from each other, and that obviously starts a bowling circle quite early, and an early bowling circle is likely at front foot contact to mean that the bowling arm is at least level with the shoulder line or even beyond the shoulder line, which is going to reduce the range of motion that that ball can be pulled through at the last minute. So go back to basics, that tent peg one position. Have a look at a Brett Lee at tent peg one. If you see where he's bowling, his back foot's down, and his hands and his arms are fairly close together, then they start to split. And the delay of that split will obviously lead to a delay in the bowling arm coming over. And as we see with Brett Lee and the Shoaib Akhtars and people like that, when they get that first position right, then it kickstarts the rest of it to happen in the proper time sequence rather than the arms getting ahead. So, you know, there are drills, absolutely right. But the bottom line is, if somebody's landing on back foot contact and their arms are already quite a long way split and through their bowling action, then they're going to release the ball without that delay that we're looking for. So it's exactly the same in throwing as well. You know, in throwing, you get the ball, you pick the ball up off the ground, and what you're looking for is for that break of the hands to happen later in the sequence. If we start the break of the hands too early, then obviously we're going to be in exactly the same position as what you see with bowlers that get to back foot contact and have already got their arms going through their motion. So have a look at back foot contact. That's the first starting point. Then apply whatever drill you want. I'm sure Sam's got a few that you can add to it, but technically that is what you're looking for.
This is something that has been talked about a lot in recent years, hasn't it, being able to delay that bowling arm. Is it something that you can consciously work on with drills, Lavers?
Yeah, I'm sure that there are lots of ways you can do it. We've got a few things that we've done over the winter to help people with that synchronisation element. One of the things, though, and one of the most effective drills we've used, that is actually kind of runs on from Gara's idea there of getting people into that tent peg one and giving them that feeling of hands being in the right place while feet are in the right place. And taking that into a moving scenario, what we do is we try and have a drill which is based on feeling and touch, where we try not to, we try and delay that separation and that front arm extension until we feel back foot contact. So it's all ideal getting it done in a stationary position to start with, but then once you take that into movement and into a walking, running approach, etc., trying to maintain that and trying to delay that until you get that contact with the ground with that right foot has been one of the most powerful ways we've done it, which has been no equipment needed, no kind of external coach to get involved, just a bowler on their own, and they're just managing the process themselves, and they're just trying to achieve that delay so that back foot contact occurs before front arm extension occurs. And that's quite a good way to give them the ownership of the drill and base it on their feelings, and it gives quite a nice success rate from what we've had so far.
A couple of other ways you can do it, if you do want to make it a bit more drill based and then take it slightly away from kind of the net environment and the match environment, you can, one of the drills that I've seen Steph do a lot online is up against the wall, just with that back foot turn. So you go position number one, you go into a position where you've got your arms extended and you just have them flat against the wall. So you go chest against the wall, almost arms extended, so the arms can't rotate and the body can't rotate, because that wall is in the way and your right arm can't move around to any degree, and then just try to rotate that back foot on the ground to a front-on position from a midway or side-on position or whatever it would be. That's quite a nice little drill. And then similarly, the same thing can be done to control the upper body movement before the lower body movement goes, is the same thing, but just with a band in the right hand. So if you stand behind a bowler with their a nice big rubber band looped through their right hand, and they're in that position where they're full separation already, so arms extended forwards and backwards, and then just rotating that back foot again to try and get those hips rotating through, but the resistance of that band obviously being something that controls the upper body position, it does give that feeling and sensation of the separation. A little bit artificial at times, but at least it gives someone a bit of an understanding if they're struggling to know what it is they're trying to feel for. It's quite a good way to create the feeling for them, even if it's not necessarily getting them bowling the ball at that stage.
And tradition would dictate that this is the kind of thing you do outside of the competitive season. Is it something that is that still true, or is that something that you can look at during a competitive season as well, on top of your normal bowling practice?
Yeah, I would say that a lot of the idea, I think we have ideals, and there are ideal times to do things, but we don't necessarily always work in an ideal world. So whilst it'd be nice to get all the technical side of things tidied away by Christmas and everyone's working that way, realistically that's just not going to happen. So there'll be other times we can do it, and even if you make small tiny games, or even if you create the game that you create is an awareness for a bowler, even if it's not a physical change, then I'd always be looking to try and work with an individual as a problem arises or before a problem arises, rather than saying actually we need to wait for our specific window, which is October to Christmas or whatever it would be. So obviously we might be a bit more aware of the situation they're in because they're playing lots of match cricket, and it might mean that it's a little bit slower to make an adjustment. But I don't see the reason sometimes in letting that issue embed itself further and further and further just to wait for our ideal window of opportunity. So it isn't the best situation to work in sometimes, but I think there's no harm in trying. Individuals obviously have different sort of methods and success rates of uptake of information and new skills. So you'll know with your guys which ones are likely to be able to adapt mid-season, and which ones probably are going to find it more of a struggle. But the education side of it should be happening all the time.
Next question is from Roshan. And Roshan says, which type of slower balls are more effective in taking wickets? That's quite an open-ended one, but let's go for it. Let's see what we can. Let's talk about slow balls.
The fastest ones.
The fastest ones. Well, I suppose, yeah, it varies so much, doesn't it? I mean, the general rule that I got brought up on in professional cricket and in international cricket was when people are looking to hit hard, they generally are aiming straight or into the leg side, you know, because that's the way that the swing goes with maximal force. So if you can get the ball to spin or break or move away from the swing of the bat, then you're obviously going to compromise the contact. But then again, it's not as simple as that always, but that's a general rule that I think is a good start. Starting point for anybody. So if you think about a right-arm bowler bowling to a right-handed batter, you're looking for a ball that goes to the from leg to off as opposed to off to leg in that principle, and then the other way around, you know, so an off cutter, I suppose, which turns in away from a left-handed striker would be a good option. And again, the other thing to do is to think about the pitch conditions that you're working with as well. So if you've got a pitch that's likely to grip a little bit, or there's a little bit of spin for the spinners in there, then you probably want to get that ball going a little bit shorter. So getting the ball into the pitch, maybe back of a length or on a good length, as opposed to chucking it all the way up there. So you give the pitch a chance to impact upon the ball. And then equally, you might want to go either slower ball bumper or try and go slower ball right up there if you're playing on a flat pitch, to take the pitch out of the equation a little bit if it's a real belter. So there's lots of things to consider. The other things to talk to about, really, about your bowlers is boundary length. Wind direction are also crucial when you're bowling slower balls. And so you might get into a context where you're playing to a short boundary one side and a long boundary into the leg side, which is the long boundary that can't be hit for six, because it's that long. We had a game with an under 14 team where this definitely played a part the other week, where I encouraged the bowlers to bowl the ball into, you know, to bowl off cutters into right handers so they could hit them into the long leg side field, and we took three catches out there. So that goes completely against the initial statement of getting the ball to go away, because the field size and the wind meant that the ball was going to hang up in the air and our catchers could get underneath it, and that's exactly what happened. So, you know, to me, you've got to be flexible, look at the conditions, look at the batter down the other end, see if they're right or left-hander, but the starting point has got to be that the ball goes away from the swing of the bat, but then bring all of the other things like boundary length, wind conditions, you know, into consideration. The other thing, which the great Ian Harvey taught me about, who's probably the best slow ball bowler there's ever been, was that against a new batter, you want to get the whole box of tricks out so he hasn't got a clue what's coming at you. But against a really set batter that's looking like they're playing brilliantly, you want to bowl him a yorker and get him off strike so you can bowl your box of tricks at the other bloke.
Lavers, do you have any? I'll ask you this in two ways. Do you have any personal preferences to types of slower ball? And also, do you have any types of slower ball which you know work better than others?
Well, in terms of preference, I think we've got to be quite adaptable to the situation. And as soon as the question came up, I wrote down five or six or seven different variables that would impact on the decision of what was going to be bowled. So, and Gareth has run through all of them there. So pitch conditions, batsman intent, batsman style, pitch surface, speed, your speed initially, wind direction, those kind of things. So they're all things that are going to be influencing the decision of what is the best slower ball. So I don't think I can say that this is one that I feel is the most effective. Every individual has a specific kind of skill set which is works best for them. A lot of the time, something like a back of the hand slower ball, which is pretty effective in the dip it gets, as well as the potential bounce, as well as taking pace off. So there are quite a few pluses to a delivery like that. But it's not necessarily a ball that suits everyone. I generally find that the side on guys find that delivery a little bit easier than the front on guys do, with the sort of rotation required in the shoulder to get the ball out. So again, it's horses for courses. Which slow balls are best for you and which slow balls are best for the situation? Looking at the guys that I work with most in the senior side, I can see that all of them have at least two options, but they're all completely different in the way they do it. One of them's very good when it comes to a knuckleball and an off cutter. One bowls the back of the hand very comfortably, and they're quite effective in the way they do it. So I couldn't pinpoint one that I would say is the most effective. However, having that skill set of a number of slow balls and having balls that suit different types of conditions, so you have a ball that can exploit pitch conditions, you have a ball that can be almost a defensive one on a flat deck, as Gareth has said there, and is quite an important part to your armoury as a bowler, without which you can find yourself going to a slow ball for the sake of it, but actually not being the right option for the situation, and that slow ball going far further than the quicker ball was.
Now it's time for the soapbox. A minute on the clock. One of the members of the team gets to talk about anything they want for that minute without interruption. And this week, it's Sam Lavery. Over to you, Lavers.
One of the really key things I think that young cricketers need to do at some stage is they need to learn to start speaking for themselves. Obviously, you get lots of young players, and a lot of the communication comes via the parents, and the emails back and forth come via the parents. But one of the really impressive things, I think, is when you see a young cricketer who suddenly starts doing it themselves. They pick up the phone, they give you a call, they say they've got a concern, they're not happy they've been dropped, or they're happy they've been selected. And I think it's really refreshing to see that from a young cricketer, whether they be at a school or your club or in the county, just to have their own opinions. I've had a couple lately where I've received emails from young cricketers who've got off their backside and said, right, I want to know why I'm not being selected, or I want to make sure that I'm focusing on this. And as a result, it's given me so much more respect for them to make me realise that actually this is a really professional young person, and this is someone who really cares about what they're doing.
OK, that is the end of the show. We are going to finish up by deciding on the winner of this week's competition. Of course, that's the prize of the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had Sandeep's question about the hip-shoulder separation and feeling that stretch as you bowl. And we had Roshan's question about slower balls. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going with Sandeep and his delayed bowling arm. I like that. That was a good question. Congratulations. A couple of courses that may help you with that.
Yeah, fantastic. And actually, there's an article this week as well by Max Andrews on that as well. So take a look at that if you want to find out more information. Now, Gareth, if someone was listening into the show and wanted to send in their question and have their chance to win that prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. We are also around on social media. Our Twitter is at pitchvisionacad, and you can find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can also subscribe to this show. It's free and it comes out every Friday. About half an hour long, as you already know, and you can do that by going to your favorite podcast app on your phone or tablet or other device and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there, and click on the subscribe button to do that. And if you want to get previous show notes or download the show directly onto your computer as an MP3 or do lots of other fun things, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the previous shows, going right back to number one. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks, guys.
I'm 20 seconds in. It's been a bit dull so far, lads, to be honest.
That's because you've been talking, Gareth.
The truth hurts, Sam. The truth hurts, Sam. Join the back of a very long queue on that comment.